This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
On this Thursday. A big show today. Nick Faribault on the Steelers-Eagles matchup. Bob Nightingale on Matt Catrillo's fascination with Juan Soto. Maybe other news. And from 2 to 2:30 today, bowl picks because of the return of the king.
It's been a while.
I know. It has been a while is right. Too long. Be great to have him back. He said the entire hour. I said, no. I said, we got baseball to talk about. I think that confused him. I'll leave it at that. What? I want to start out with crowd for a moment. So, I'm going through some of the SMU stuff. And let's face it, the college football playoff, boy, did they ever hit the mother load on iconic venues in the opening round. Columbus, State College, South Bend, Austin. 3 100,000-seat stadiums, with Notre Dame being the smallest at 80,000. My goodness, did they ever hit the jackpot? And that now brings up home field. So I took some time to look at the SMU schedule this year. Home field can mean so much. Because it's not, you know, in baseball, I'll kid around with the Phillies fans about, yeah, you're the most intimidating crowd in sport, blah, 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 right? But it doesn't play a role. It may juice up the home team or whatever. But, you know, you don't intimidate pros. And maybe if you can disrupt them, their ability to hear a signal under the new system, okay. Basketball, same thing. You either hit the free throw or you don't. Right? You're somebody that's intimidated, shouldn't be there to begin with anyway. Okay? But then there's football. Completely different ball game. Completely different ball game. The ability at the line of scrimmage to communicate. Pre-snap. Well, the game is in Beaver Stadium. So let's examine the SMU schedule. You want to know the largest crowd they saw this year? Now, the championship game was 54,000, just so you know. But 35,000 were Clemson fans. Then there were SMU fans. Everybody else was corporate neutral, right? So that doesn't play a role, okay, in this conversation. And The largest crowd they faced on the road this year was at Louisville, 50,000. Okay. You want to know what the second largest road crowd they saw this year, Todd? 36,000. That's the second largest they faced this year. 36,000.
Does the ACC have any 100,000 seat stadiums? All right, I didn't think so.
No. No. Clemson is 78,000. Pitt's 65,000. I'm sure you all saw the overhead picture of the Clemson Pitt crowd.
Ooh, boy.
So.
I was going to say, Pitt's not putting 65,000 in Acushnet.
No, that's not happening. All right. But they have faced a 50,000 crowd at Louisville, and Louisville's loud, by the way. And the next biggest crowd they face is 36,000. They have not faced a crowd of this size and magnitude this season. When you're looking at the largest crowd you faced, and this is double that, when you're looking at the second largest crowd you faced, and there's 70,000 more, that does bring with it a potential issue. And this is where you, the fans, come in, because guess what? You're the issue. You are the issue. How about that? And that's what I wanted to knock home today. This home field advantage in the opening round is all of that. And especially in a situation like this, Tennessee is going to go to Ohio State. Tennessee, every other year plays at Alabama, 100,000 fans. Now, Tennessee played at Oklahoma. Now, Tennessee played Georgia. I think that game was in Athens. Yeah, that game. So they played at Sanford State. It may not be 100,000, but like loud. Been there, done that. Clemson has. They played in the dome against Georgia, so it was loud. But in the ACC, they're not going to see big crowds. And they're going to face 100,000 there. In Indiana, they did play at Ohio State, which is a larger crowd than South Bend. And then there's SMU. Home stadium's 32,000 seats. Okay. Now, at home, they're not going to have any issues, that's for sure. But at home, 32,000 seats, and on the road, okay, they play these road games. The number one crowd was 50. The number two crowd was 36. The number three crowd was 34. Really? Now, they may come in completely poised, set to go, and handle it with complete ease. I mean, I will never discount that possibility. Okay? Would never discount that possibility. But boy, it's awfully tough for me to think that you don't have a situation like Illinois, which is more used to it than they are at SMU. And they got, what, five?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Five false starts? Now, they'll try to go tempo. To try and negate some of that. But again, your presence at the game is incredible. And it means it could really be influential. And that's what I'm trying to bring out here. I mean, it could be influential in a game like this. It's a playoff game. And it's what you've ached to see as a Penn State fan for a long time. Playoffs, and not only that, your stadium. And you have an opportunity to be influential. Because you're facing a team that is not used to seeing this. I can't imagine how loud they've cranked up the noise. Because you're going to go to a place that has 36,000 fans, which is Virginia, by the way. You go to a place with 36,000 fans, I'm not even sure you do the noise drill that week. And you're potentially going to see 70,000 more this time through. It doesn't guarantee you anything, but boy, it sure does help you.
That's got to be so tough on the outside offensive linemen. You almost have to go straight hand signals for them. I don't know how you hear signals from a quarterback if it's as loud as it usually gets there.
Yeah, I don't know. But if you get the decibel level up to 100, they're not used to that.
No.
I mean, they're just not. Now, it doesn't mean they don't come in here completely poised and, hey, you know, and handle it. Guess what? That's a possibility. I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, you don't get to be 11-2 without having some semblance of poise and, you know, to go with your ability. So I don't discount it, but boy, I sure feel like it's a huge advantage for Penn State because it's not like when Ohio State comes in here and Ohio State's been here before, and it's not as if Will Howard, the quarterback, hadn't played at Texas before, and it's not as if they, you know, other players hadn't played at Michigan before. There's a lot of things that come into play here. Then there's this group. They haven't played in an environment like this. And it's something, as a side note, to consider. Now, look, it'll be colder. That usually muffles some of the noise. But I'll be honest with you. When you're talking home field advantage, that's one heck of a home field advantage.
Hey, Steve, we got a caller, Brian from Northern Virginia.
Hey, Brian, how are you today?
Great, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Well, good. Well, I'm very excited. I have my playoff tickets for the game next week, and very excited. I was just wondering, and I appreciate that you're talking about the size of Beaver Stadium and how the fans are going to be important to bring a great atmosphere to help the team and kind of really help put SMU back on their heels and create communication issues and things like that. I was just wondering if you could. I've seen some different emails, and Audrey Snyder had an article, and I've seen different other articles online. I don't know what information you had, but you know, some people were saying that the student section was reduced by like 9,000 seats, and there were some students who wanted tickets and didn't get them, and then the one section of the lower bowl, like the SA area, heading over to the west side of the stadium, they're going to put the SMU band, mm-hmm. and things like that. I don't know if you could address this. And there's also issues about ticket sales. Different people are having problems. I don't know if you could address that. But also, the other issue I heard is that is the SMU is going to be able to have like some of their own videos playing when they come out on the field, and that the college football playoff committee is going to try to make it like a almost like a bowl site versus a true home game for Penn State. Can you give any insight to that, sir?
Well, it's all true, because, again, the college football playoff, this is their game. Penn State is hosting the game. Penn State gets money from parking and concessions, but everything else, all the tickets are all college football playoff. So they determine how many seats the student section gets. They determine how many seats SMU is allotted. They determine an area where SMU's band is going to be. Right, because SMU's band is going to be there.
Tennessee is going to have their own intro music before they go onto the field at Ohio State. Okay.
Okay.
All that, you know, and I'm sure the same thing will happen for SMU when they come out, because this is the college football playoffs game. It is their show. They're in charge of all the logistics you're talking about. And because they are, it does bring with it differences. But it's still going to be a crowd that at minimum will have 90,000 Penn State fans there, at minimum, if not more.
Okay.
Right?
Should we expect the other game day stuff to remain the same, like from the blue band, the other in-stadium videos or music or things, or will that be different?
Well, no, it'll be different in that there'll be some mixture of the SMU band will get a chance to play.
But I mean, like in between, like on third downs or things, when sometimes in the stadium they play different music to hype up the crowd or whatever.
I think they'll be allowed to do that. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's part of hosting it.
I was just trying to get an idea as to what to expect, because I was a little surprised reading some of these things, and I figure you probably have real insight into what, you know, is actually happening. So,
I'm not surprised by it, because again, it's not Penn State's game. It's Penn State's venue, but it's not their game. It's the college football playoffs game, and these are the same rules at Notre Dame, at Ohio State, at Texas, and here. There's going to be no difference here compared to the other playoff sites, because it's their game, and Penn State just happens to be hosting the game as the higher seed.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And at some point, and maybe next week, I wonder, you know, I'm sure as you get more into the game, if you'll be able to talk about maybe some defensive adjustments you think we might be able to make just to maybe limit some of their passing game or the mobility of their quarterback, so that we have a little bit tighter of a defensive showing than we did in the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, there's a lot of, Jack and I talked about this today. There's a lot of things that SMU does that is somewhat similar stylistically to what Oregon does. I'll tell you what a big difference the two of us see on the tapes. And I say this with all due respect. The two tackles for SMU are not in the same class as the two tackles of Oregon. And the two tackles for Oregon ended up being named second team All-Americans. The two tackles for SMU are good, but they are not in the same category as the two tackles for Oregon. And that is something to watch for in a game like this. They also do a good job of using the running back in the pass game, but he's a former wide receiver when he was at Miami.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Steve. As always, you do a great job. Love the show. I'm hoping we have a great turnout for the playoff game, and I hope you and Jack have a great broadcast as always. So thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate you very much.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
We will come back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ho, ho, ho. Sunbury Motors Ford will help you get through the snow.
SMC has the area's largest selection of 4x4s with over 310 new and pre-owned trucks and SUVs priced as low as $13,968 with payments from just $259 a month with no money down. Sunbury Motors has over 40 new 2024 Escapes, slashed $5,000, plus get 1.9% financing for 60 months starting at just $27,650. SMC has 31 of the top-selling 2024 Ford Bronco Sports, discounted $47.50 and priced from only $28,315. Choose from over 45 new Ford F-150s with savings up to an amazing $12,616. And they start at just $46,549 with available 1.9% for 60 months. The Mertz family and all of Sunbury Motors would like to wish everyone a safe and joyous holiday season.
Who knows Santa? Sunbury Motors knows Santa. An in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Birdie Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you, and this half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. We have a multitude of insurance needs. What, you want to handle it all yourself? No. You need pros who can handle it, get you the best price, save you money, make sure you're fully insured, and you go to a place where customer service means everything. That is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Very pleased to be joined by Nick Faribault as the Eagles get ready to take on the Steelers. First of all, Nick, how you been?
I've been doing really well, Steve. I appreciate you having me on. Good December weather over here in Pittsburgh. It's about 22 degrees with a wind chill of 5, so it's cold, but I've been doing well.
Yeah, very similar conditions here, my friend, just so you know. No real differences between the two. A guy that's been relatively hot the way he's played has been Russell Wilson. Since he come back from injury and his insertion into the lineup, what difference has that meant, not just for the offense, but what difference has it meant for the defense, Nick?
Yeah, they've been able to stay in drives a little more. And, you know, the explosive play element, I think, has been a big part of that, right? His moon ball has really been a huge aspect of this offense's breakout. You look at his connection with George Pickens, even other receivers, right? Van Jefferson's had a few big plays. Calvin Austin, last week you had Scotty Miller and Mike Williams getting on the action. I think he's unlocked vertical ability for Pat Freiermuth. I also think his ability to change protections and kind of get everything set pre-snap has been significant. They don't have as many false starts, delay of games, illegal shifts, illegal motions. You know, these pre-snap penalties going to plague them for a while. And they don't have those under him. But I think his leadership to the locker room, too, right? You talk about, you know, what it means to the defense, what it means to the offense. I think having a guy like Russell Wilson that's been to a Super Bowl, that's been there, that's done that, he gives a different perspective on things. You know, even from Cam Hayward. Cam Hayward's been at this for 13 seasons now. He's 35 years old. He is a great leader, obviously, on the defensive side of the football. But Russell Wilson's perspective of having been a guy that has been to the mountaintop, it's new. And so I think that is an additional thing to it. But they've extended drives. They've been able to stay on the field. The defense hasn't been on the field as much. And so the defense comes out a little bit more refreshed. And generally that's led to pretty good results. It's allowed them to get after quarterbacks and really convert these turnovers at a high rate.
What has it also in turn meant for the running game? I mean, for Warren and Harris, what has it meant just to have the threat that the Steelers are going to go downfield?
Yeah, I think, you know, it puts them in a lot of too high situations, you know, that cover two, cover four, cover six shells that you see from a lot of teams. I think about the Bengals game when you really want to look at the illustration of what it does for the running game, because you force them out of those two safety looks,
right.
And then all of a sudden you have single high coverage, and you can hit Pickens down the sideline. You can hit big-time man coverage spots. So you force them kind of to play those two safety looks, and that leaves another guy that's not in the box, right? And so it opens up space for Harris and Warren. And we know Harris, you know, I think is a guy who's never been the most efficient running back, right? He's never been a guy that's known for high carries, high efficiency. But I also don't think that's necessarily been what's needed this year. You get him into space, he's breaking a ton of tackles. So is Jaylen Warren now that he's healthy. And so when you're able to dictate coverage like that, Steve, it opens up things for the offense. I still think the run game, it can find another gear. I think they've been solid, a lot of their run game success has come off volume, and they've hit some pretty boom or bust plays. I think they've been pretty boom or bust, right? A lot of 20-yard runs, but a few negative 5 runs. And I think we want to see a few more 5, 6, 7 yarders, a little bit more sustained success. So I think that's the next step for the offense, the next step for this running game. But there's no doubt the explosive play element that Russell Wilson has brought to the table has allowed Warren and Harris to find more space. And when they're in space, they're really dangerous.
Look, if anybody knows Joey Porter's game just by seeing him in practice every day, I think I have a pretty good handle on Joey Porter Jr.'s game. And he was handsy when he was here. I don't care if it was practice or a game. He was handsy here. He's been handsy, especially the last few weeks with Pittsburgh. Now, A, what has he said about it? And B, how is it hurting him at all, the way he's playing, or it's hurting the defense?
Yeah, I think Joey is kind of taking it, man, to heart. And listen, I know Joey pretty well, too. I've known Joey for a while. And yep. Joey's a guy that takes things that he struggles at very personally. He wants to be great. Like, his drive for greatness is one of his best attributes, but sometimes he can get in his own head. And I think, you know, that's kind of what you're seeing. I think he looks at how the referees are calling him, and there's a little bit of a target on Joey Porgy right now. He has a reputation. Now, granted, a lot of the penalties are penalties, and so he's got to stop doing that. He's got to stop grabbing guys at the line of scrimmage. There are some plays where you just look on film, and he doesn't need to grab guys. I look at the penalty against Andre Yoshivas in Cincinnati in that sixth penalty game, Steve. I mean, just panic for no reason. I think he needs to trust his technique, trust himself, and stop panicking so much and stop kind of having this tendency to grab. Now, that's muscle memory at this point because, as you mentioned, this has been a tendency of his, not only just at Penn State. I think you even look back in high school. I think it's been something that has consistently been there. So it's something he's going to have to unlearn. But I think he's really talked about kind of focusing on that technique, working throughout it. But he does not want to lose the edge to his game. What makes Joey Porter Jr. Joey Porter Jr. is that he does play with physicality. He's a press corner. Mm-hmm. He's super long. He's got gifts that a lot of guys do not have. But he has this grabby tendency. And you look at his penalties. He's been called for 14 penalties. 12 of them have come in three games against bigger physical receivers. Three of his four most highly penalized games in the NFL were against T. Higgins, DK Metcalf, and Cortland Sutton. I don't think that's an outlier. I think you look at big physical receivers, and those are the guys that he has tendency to grab onto, latch onto, commit defensive pass interference, commit holding, illegal contact, whatever you want, whatever he gets called for. And so I think that's something that he's just going to have to kind of unlearn against these bigger physical guys, is stop grabbing as much. You're there. He doesn't allow much separation. It's almost all the time when he's at the catch point, or he just does something off the line of scrimmage. You know, I remember against Washington, he grabs Terry McLaurin's face mask and just yanks him down on a fade route. I mean, he did not need to do it right at the line of scrimmage. So just egregious things like that need to get out of his game, and he needs to trust his technique more. And I think that's what they've been relating to.
And the reason I bring it up is A.J. Brown, about as physical a receiver with talent as you're going to find.
Yeah. I mean, A.J. Brown is in that mold. You know, I talked about DK Metcalf, Cortland Sutton, T. Higgins. Terry McLaurin was another game. That was the fourth game. And McLaurin isn't as big as those other guys I named, but he plays much bigger than his size. He is about 6 feet tall and about 200, but he plays like he's 6'3", 220. And so that mentality can get Joey off his game. If you mention A.J. Brown, I mean, you're talking about a guy that is a physical nightmare to face when you are a corner. And so covering him alone is going to be enough of an issue, right? And so you don't want to grab him. If I were the Eagles, I mean, I'd be taking shots down the field against Joey Porter Jr. I'm sure that's going to be a matchup the Steelers are going to want. They're going to want Joey Porter Jr. manned up against A.J. Brown. They trust it. And we know Joey Porter Jr. can lock out receivers, right? We've seen it before against guys like DeAndre Hopkins. He shut down Ja'Marr Chase last year. He's done it before against top players. Even this year, he's done it against guys like Drake London, you know, bigger physical receivers that we're talking about. So he's just going to have to lock in and kind of stop doing those tendencies that I said. But it's going to be tough. A.J. Brown, with all the hoopla that's been coming out of Philadelphia this week, I think that's going to be a very motivated A.J. Brown, too. So definitely a tough matchup for Joey.
It's not as if they haven't faced a quality out-of-this-world running back, because they've already faced Derrick Henry. But Henry and Barkley are different styles. What kind of job, in your opinion, did the Steelers do with Henry, and how different is the approach they need with Barkley?
The job they did with Henry was interesting. I mean, he ran 13 times for 65 yards, but he only ran 13 times.
Right.
The Ravens really leaned into Lamar and the passing game that day, which was interesting. I don't think the Eagles are going to do the same thing. You look at the Steelers and what they've kind of faced this year, and they haven't really faced a lot of teams that have been willing to ground and pound with them. The Steelers have been the team that grounds and pounds the ball, and they've held the ball for a lot of time of possession because they've been able to really convert on third downs, and they've been a very good third down offense. But I think, you know, you look back at some of their losses. Specifically, I want to go to that Colts game. You think about Jonathan Taylor.
Right.
They didn't have a great game against them. I think they had 23 rushes for 88 yards, something like that. Right, not out of this world stat line, but they ran the ball 32 times against the Steelers that day. And I think Taylor profiles pretty similarly to Saquon. You know, they're both patient runners that can find holes. They can stop and instantly accelerate. They're great in the open field. That's kind of what I think Saquon presents for the Steelers. And I think it's a really hard matchup for them. And so, you know, I think what they did against Derrick Henry was they just kind of crashed down. And sure, they got hit with a few big runs, but they also had a really positive game script where they kind of forced the Ravens to play from behind, have to put the ball in Lamar's hands, and Lamar clearly wanted to attack the Steelers secondary. You know, this Eagles offense is not built off the arm of Jalen Hurts. It's built more off the legs of Jalen Hurts and the legs of Saquon Barkley. And, of course, they have, obviously, big-time weapons in the passing game when you have look at Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown, even though Dallas Goddard's out. Saquon can catch the ball out of the backfield too, but I think Saquon is specifically designed in a similar way to what Jonathan Taylor does, and that gave the Steelers a ton of trouble that game. Just focusing on Jonathan Taylor, it opened up areas in the passing game for Flacco to attack in that game. They lost that game 27-24, so I think that's kind of the game script you look at here. So I think the Eagles are going to give the Steelers something they haven't seen in about 10 weeks or so, which is a team that's legitimately going to commit to the ground game, and we'll see how they respond. I don't think any of us know the answer to that necessarily yet, but we've seen it hurt the Steelers before.
So Nick, what about T.J. Watt? How would you evaluate his performance? Because in the past, the Steelers sort of went the way he's gone. How has he gone?
I think he has been a guy that's attracted more attention than any other pass rusher in football this year. And that's been the interesting thing is, Steve, teams are finally kind of playing T.J. Watt like how they played Myles Garrett, how they played Max Crosby, how they played Micah Parsons. And it's kind of interesting because he's at the highest chip rate of his career. They're doubling and tripling teaming him, so the Steelers have had to move him around the formation. I mean, T.J. Watt's been very good this year when you look at it, and I don't think the sack production is as gaudy as he usually is, right? He doesn't have 22.5 sacks like he did 1 year. He only has 9.5. But he's still been a very effective player, and he's still the most disruptive run defender in football. How many times does he just fly off the edge and tackle a guy 5 yards behind the line?
Right.
And he did that to open up the game last week against the Browns. That is what T.J. Watt has done. And so with all the focus they give to T.J. Watt, then you look at guys like Cam Hayward, who's having an unbelievable year, and Highsmith is back, and Herbig's having a breakout year, and even throw Benton and Ogunjobi in there. T.J. Watt has played very well, and what he's done is he's allowed a lot of the other guys to get production. The sack numbers aren't there, but you look at the defensive line, it has forced teams to conform their schemes to the Steelers' defensive line. So the ball's just coming out super quick, and at that point, it's up to the linebackers in the secondary to make the tackles.
Okay, they built a little bit of a cushion. What's interesting is the Ravens have been good, but they haven't produced the way I thought they might. And so the Steelers do have a little bit of a cushion in what is a difficult stretch run. Nick, what are your thoughts on the body of work of each team to this point and the cushion the Steelers have?
The Steelers have done a nice job beating teams they should beat. They've lost to a few teams that they should be, right? The Browns on Thursday night, the Cowboys. Looking back at that game is going to hurt them, but so have the Ravens. I mean, losing to the Browns also, losing to the Raiders. You look at some of those games, and I think those are clunkers on both teams' schedule, but I also think the Steelers have an identifiable kind of formula that has worked, right? The explosive plays with Russ, they run the ball, they're physical in the trenches on both sides of the ball, and they are really, really good at getting turnovers. And they capitalize off those turnovers. And then on the other side of that, they do not turn the ball over. And so a lot of that has really allowed Pittsburgh to soar. I think this Baltimore team has a few weaknesses that you look at. I think specifically the offensive line for Baltimore has just not been up to snuff. Pittsburgh's offensive line is young and it's gritty and it's not fully formed. It's a pretty average to maybe slightly above average group. But they get after it. They are physical. They are nasty. They want to wear you down. I don't see that from Baltimore. I see a softer team, and I think that's significant when you talk about the grind of a schedule. When you get against teams like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh that have these big physical O-lines, big physical D-lines that try to wear you down, I think that's significant. I also think the big thing for the Ravens compared to the Steelers has been the kicking game. I mean, that is significant. Kicker has been huge. Justin Tucker's struggles have probably cost the Ravens two or three wins. I mean, you look at the overall season and his struggles against the Steelers, against the Eagles. They could have won both of those games if Justin Tucker hits one or two of those field goals. And so it has been significant. Chris Boswell has been the best kicker in football. And you look at the other three AFC North kickers right now, McPherson, Tucker, and Hopkins, those guys are bottom three field goal percentage made. So I think that is kind of an underrated fact, too. You know, I think the Steelers are kind of have this formula on both sides of the ball that really works. I think the Ravens are super explosive. I think they are much better pass defense than they were a few weeks ago when they've made their lineup changes. So I think the arrow's pointing up in Baltimore, and I think they might win out. I think if they win this week, you know, I think they have a chance to win out. I really do. And the Steelers game there is going to be tough if George Pickens can't play, and we don't know if he will be able to play next week. He's not playing this week. But I do think the Steelers have done things specifically in the trenches, and especially in the kicking game, where those margins are thin, and I think they've made up for it.
You mentioned Boswell, because last year I felt Elliott carry the Eagles' offense the way at times Boswell has carried the Steelers' defense this year, because Elliott's having an up-and-down year for Philadelphia. Boswell is not. Nick, the consistency of this guy, I mean, for years, I mean, do some people actually take him for granted because he is so consistent?
I think they do. And you know, we're kind of in an age of kicking where kickers now make it from longer than ever. They're more accurate from further out than ever. And I still think Chris Boswell, who's been at it for a decade now, just gets overlooked. He had one bad stretch of his career. That was because he had a groin injury. And now all of a sudden, we're talking about a guy that is drilling consistently from 50-plus. He is 10 of 12 from 50-yarders. One of those misses was from 64. The other was blocked. He's perfect on extra points. The consistency he has is actually incredible. And he's not, I don't think he has the strongest leg in the league either. Like you talk about Elliott, for example. That guy has an absolute cannon on his leg.
Yep.
But he has really struggled from 50-plus. You know, from 49 in, that's where Jake Elliott's been pretty good this year. But from 50-plus, he has not been as good. The Steelers, on the other hand, have been able to stall out drives at the 37, the 38, the 39, even the 40, and trust they're going to get three out of it because of Boswell. And that has been a significant factor, right? They've won two games with six field goals made. They won at Atlanta and at home against Baltimore with six field goals made in a game because Boswell is just that guy. And so I think that is significant. I think you look at their schedule, some of the struggles teams have faced against them in the kicking game, and what Boswell has done, and it is a margin. It matters, and having a kicker like that that's been the best kicker in football this year is on pace to break the all-time record for field goals made in the year. Yeah, that matters, and it's been significant.
Final question, Nick, and that is this game, the significance on each side. What do you think we'll know about each team after this game is over with, because both are right in the thick of the playoff picture in their respective conferences?
I think for the Eagles, it's about checking off another box. I think specifically, can you get the passing game going a little bit, right? That's been the talk all week in Philadelphia. Can you get A.J. Brown involved a little more? He hasn't had 10 or more targets in a game since week one. I know he's missed four games with an injury, but can you get a little bit of cohesion going? Because the Steelers secondary will allow a few explosive plays. Talk about Joey Porter Jr., some of his struggles. Can you get the passing game involved? But I think, you know, what you can know about the Eagles is, how do they match up against a team that will match their intensity? I don't think a lot of teams have gone to Philadelphia this year and tried to play as physical as them in the trenches. They're going to learn a lot about themselves in that regard. So will the Steelers. But I think the Steelers, without George Pickens, if they win this game, I think that speaks to a larger thing. If you can do it without your best receiver, with the wide receiving core that the Steelers have, I think it proves just how sustainable their kind of model is, right? The run game, the defense with turnovers, and the explosive plays. If all that holds up, and speaks to what Russell Wilson has done. And so I think you're going to learn in Philly just about how physical this team is, just about how kind of grinded out they are, how sustainable that is, you know, when you see teams like Detroit, I think that's going to be an interesting matchup. Because I think the Steelers kind of have a similar model to Detroit, right? They want to run the ball. Yeah. They want to hit explosives, similar things like that. And then you look at what Pittsburgh wants to do. They want to really, on offense, hit the explosive play, try and get after you in the trenches. But they don't have their main explosive playmaker in George Pickens. So if the Steelers can win this game, it's going to prove that they can really wade in the waters against top teams, even without George Pickens, which I think would be significant because we know how dangerous they could be with George Pickens.
Nick, an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. It's a great time as always.
Nick Faribault joining us this half hour, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
The holidays are a time of year to celebrate and reflect. Reflect on the past year, a year filled with challenges and uncertainty. Uncertainty that bred resilience and hope. Hope for healing, change, new beginnings, and unity. United as one people, one community, by one mission, to safeguard and protect what matters most. From all of us at Purdy Insurance, we wish you health, happiness, and joy this holiday season, and success in the new year.
Ho, ho, ho. Sunbury Motors Ford will help you get through the snow.
SMC has the area's largest selection of 4x4s with over 310 new and pre-owned trucks and SUVs priced as low as $13,968 with payments from just $259 a month with no money down. Sunbury Motors has over 40 new 2024 Escapes slash $5,000. Plus, get 1.9% financing for 60 months starting at just $27,650. SMC has 31 of the top-selling 2024 Ford Bronco Sports, discounted $47.50 and priced from only $28,315. Choose from over 45 new Ford F-150s with savings up to an amazing $12,616. And they start at just $46,549 with available 1.9% for 60 months. The Mertz family and all of Sunbury Motors would like to wish everyone a safe and joyous holiday season.
Who knows Santa? Sunbury Motors knows Santa.